I'm your host, Garth Braithwaite, and this is Web Friends. Today is a good day, and you're about to hear an excellent interview with Johnny Hallman. Johnny is a very talented designer and developer who, 2 years ago, switched from full-time work at Adobe to freelancing in Brooklyn. He has an excellent perspective on freelancing and some very sound advice for anyone considering it. Before we get to the interview, however, let me introduce Johnny by telling you how I met him. Before he began his full-time career, he created a Twitter client called Destroy Twitter back in the early days of the Twitter API. At the time, I was hosting a different podcast and asked him to be on the show to talk about it. Following the first episode, I had him on a few more times at various conferences where he was speaking. Eventually, we both ended up working at Adobe XD, the experienced design team at Adobe. I've always been impressed with his ability to not only learn new tech, but to learn it with the purpose of creating something useful and something well-designed. Okay, so now you know him well enough to start the interview. Let's jump to that right after a quick word from our sponsors.
This episode of Web Friends is sponsored by Campaign Monitor. Sending email campaigns doesn't need to be a chore. Campaign Monitor makes it fun, easy, and beautiful. Try your hand at their template builder and have a responsive email template ready in 60 seconds. Campaign Monitor also lets you offer their services to your clients at your prices. And if you need help creating better emails, Campaign Monitor just released a free ebook with their top 100 email campaigns of 2013.
It's also sponsored by Symbolicons. Symbolicons is a family of simple, precise vector icons created by Jory Raphael, who designed the artwork for Good Stuff and its shows. There are 9 different icon sets that have been created with a consistent weight and style to visually match one another. Buy the bundle and get over 2,400 icons all at once. Go to symbolicons.com, use the code GOODSTUFF01, and get 20% off your order. All right, Johnny, thanks for joining us. So, first question, what's the best advice that you've received, either professionally or personally in your life, that something that's just kind of stuck with you?
So, this one's kind of tough because there's been a number of really good advice points that people have told me over the years or that sort of stuff. So I think the one that's been really hitting me close to home or just like being really useful lately has been that it's okay to say no to things. I know Jason Santamaria, a fellow studio mate, he did a talk about this at one of the Creative Mornings events. And he talked about how, you know, red flags on a project could add up even if the money from the project is really, really high and, like, you know, you can't say no to something. You should really take into consideration more than just the income of a project. And it could really, you know, that... just being able to say no is a powerful thing because it also allows you to say yes to other things that would probably be in your better interest. So lately, being a freelancer and just having to decide which projects to take, especially in New York where projects are flying left and right, you're getting contacted pretty frequently. You have to pick and choose the right ones, because if you take on a project that ends up dragging on for way longer than the agreed upon timeline or anything like that, you could miss out on the projects that you should take. So yeah, that's one of the points of advice.
That's awesome. I feel like most designers and developers, we're pretty good at solving problems. And so that usually means when we see an interesting problem, we have a hard time saying no, because we're already trying to solve the problem in our head.
Yeah, exactly. It's like that. I saw this cartoon or this comic once about programmers, how you just like can walk up to any programmer and just like give them a tough puzzle or problem to solve, and they'll just like make it their ultimate goal to figure out this problem. And I find myself being like that. If somebody has an issue, I feel like I need to solve it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think some of it for me stems from being IT support for my parents when I was young. Where it started.
Yeah, and then it's kind of a bummer. Like you feel bad pointing them to Google, just saying, oh, this was actually the first search result for Google. try that next time. But you can't say that because it's like the tough way to do it. Or that website that says, like, let me Google that for you.
Yeah, that's pretty funny stuff. And those sort of people and those sort of situations, when you do solve the problem, the feedback is fantastic, right? When you have somebody who has a tough problem and you do come up with a solution that solves everything for them, like, it's really rewarding, and aside from the money.
Right.
So, yeah, that's a hard thing to do, saying no.
Yeah, and then that person is in debt to you. You get a freebie whenever you want. Just say, like, all right, well, I'll give you 15 minutes or half an hour here to help you solve your problem. But then it's nice to, like, be able to give and take with that.
Very mafia-ish. You owe me one.
Yeah.
I'll call on you for a favor sometime.
Exactly.
All right. So that's sound advice. I would say, even if you're not freelancing, there's times when, if you're in a full-time position, you should probably say, hey, this isn't a great idea. Is there any way we could not do this?
Yeah. And then your manager just says, like, well, we got some, you know, stakeholders here that are the main ones that have to make the decisions here. But the other thing that sort of goes along with that is, oh man, I'm completely blanking on what I was just going to say. Like, those opportunities don't really go away. That's another thing I learned.
Oh yeah.
Is that as a freelancer, if somebody comes to you and really wants you to work on a project, and it's just not the right time and you just can't take it on, most cases I found you could say, no, I can't do it right now, but, you know, in a few months, let's sync up again and see if it'll work out. And that's happened a few times with me. And before that, when I was, like, entering the freelance world, I was like, oh man, if I turn this down, there's no way, like, I'm not going to get to this next level and everyone's going to forget about me. But everything really comes back if it's really, you know, meant to happen.
Very cool. All right, so then how do you know when to say no? When do you say no and when do you say yes? Like, what sort of criteria do you try to? Because it is good information to know that you can.
Yeah.
Doing so and knowing when to do so is another problem.
Mm-hmm. So I've learned from the past few months of, like, really taking on way too much work. I've learned that it's best to default to no. If you're just, like, working solo, you can only take on so much work. And I have the habit of saying yes to everything, or, like, wanting to challenge myself. So I'll be like, yeah, sure, I can work on 5 projects at the same time with the same deadline. I don't see anything wrong with that. But it's really come back to bite me, which is why I'm on a very long break right now, just trying to not take on client work. But I'm easing out of it. So I'm getting back into the swing of things of having to say yes to a few projects. But the biggest thing for me is just defaulting to no, so that I'm not in the mindset of, let's try to make it work, even if it means me working late nights and weekends. So once you, like, sort of establish that as, like, let me try to convince myself that I should be taking this project. I mean, some of them that come up are just too fun and exciting to turn down. Like when my friend reached out about working on the carousel stuff, I was like, okay, well, let me make room in my schedule to make this happen, because it's the audience that big is crazy. So
yeah.
It'd be nice to work on that project. It seemed like the next step up from working on something like 53's pencil page is this nice, 53 Dropbox, which is even this bigger crowd. And I haven't been to that level yet. So it was nice to do a project like that and see the response of it. And then also to be able to build something that worked across, feels like, infinite devices, including, like, Samsung proprietary browsers and that kind of stuff.
Did they really have those requirements?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah. Had a lot of GitHub, like, issues just saying, like, this browser, this doesn't work, this browser, you know, it's a typical story. But, oh man, to have something like a really intense scrolling website with animations, hardware acceleration, all that kind of stuff, and to say it needs to be working on IE8, it's a tough challenge.
That's hard. I used to, this was back in the days when it was IE6 was the oof, the nemesis. And I was doing freelance at the time, and it was, we would charge extra for IE6. Like, as soon as that popped up, you're like, all right, we just have to tack on another thing.
Yeah, of course.
Because it's
of course.
Most of the browsers, you know, I fully expect to have to tweak for Firefox. But when you get into stuff like IE2 versions back, you're like, yeah, that's going to be double.
Yeah, because I was relying on, I remember I was relying on background size for a lot of stuff, just so I didn't have to set explicit dimensions for most of the images.
Yeah.
And then when I was ready to like test on IE8, I just remember they're like, oh yeah, background size not supported.
Yeah, and you have to use conditional comments, and you're pretty much building a second site is what it is. You get it working in one.
Yeah, like the carousel site ended up being three websites in one. And it used the same HTML across every device, but the style sheets and JavaScript swapped out based on a number of things, media queries, the device, that kind of stuff, so that like the handheld phone is a completely different website from the tablet, which is a completely different website from the desktop view. But they all had to use the same HTML because Dropbox refused to have like any m. subdomain.
Yeah.
So that was tricky.
But. Yeah, that sounds like real responsive design. We oftentimes talk about responsive design as being media queries, but that's really only scraping the surface.
Right. Yeah, there's so much else you can do, especially when you get into like vertical height media queries. Oh, man. Yeah, whole different ballgame.
All right. So we kind of got an off tangent, which is fine. But what are the sort of, like, do you have like a tally? So if a project pops up and you default to no, which is fantastic, and that's a good place to be in when you can. I find that when you're first starting freelance, you kind of have to default to yes for a while.
Mm-hmm.
To build up reserves.
Oh yeah, yeah, of course, of course.
So once you get to the point where you're now able to kind of default to no and pick and choose your projects, you still get burned, right? There's still times where you're like, this seemed like a perfect project. Now I'm halfway into it, and there's something going on. Do you have red flags that you look for to try and help you before you get to that point?
Yeah, usually I just try to get on a really good rapport with the project manager. So that they become a little bit more on my side. And I've been lucky to be able to work with a few PMs that are just like really considerate with the project scope and all of that. So when it comes down to it, it's not just like, well, we need to hit this deadline. It's more just like, are you sure this is like, let me know if we're giving you too much stuff or putting too much on your plate. So it's nice to have, one, it's nice to have multiple projects going on just so you can make it clear that this isn't your only project. But at the same time, I guess some clients don't like to hear that. I guess I've just been fortunate these last few that I'm working with projects where the client was referred by a good friend.
Yeah.
So I already have like a good idea and a good relationship and a good in for the client. So I'm not just taking on some like blind date kind of client where I have no idea what to expect. I have no history, like I don't know their history at all. So there could be red flags all over and I just haven't seen them yet. So that's why like I much prefer those kind of projects and working out of studio mates where everyone is referring something. Like ever since I've been here, I think I've been here like 2 years now. And every single project that I've had as a freelancer has come from a referral in StudioMates. So because of that, I haven't had to deal with any like cold call clients where you don't have any history of them, so you don't know what's like working with them. Most of the projects I've been fortunate enough to take on have been like a friend just saying, listen, these people need this work done, but trust me, they're really good, and I work there or whatever. And it works out most cases. But yeah, it's, you got to keep that side eye going of, you know, oh, they don't get back to me until a week after I've emailed them. That's, that's not a good thing. You know, if communication's bad, if they don't want to talk about the budget, if, you know, like I've had a few potential clients come up to me where they're just like, all right, give me an estimate for this project. And my first question, of course, is just like, okay, what's your budget? Just start talking about that first. And I've had one client just say like, oh, we don't have a budget, so just what's your estimate? And I spend all this time just coming up with an estimate that I feel is really good and honest and something that's realistic compared to trying to make it work for them. And then I get an email back just saying like, oh, sorry, we decided to go with somebody else, which first I didn't know that we were competing. And then they say, you are a little bit above our budget. So it's like right there, I didn't get the project, but then also they secretly had a budget. Yeah. And it's like, so those kind of projects kill me, where I'd rather just like go into it being on the same page as everybody. So those are the kind of red flags I look out for. And a good referral goes a long way to like clearing out all those red flags.
I really like that. With the fact that this is Web Friends, obviously. I'm personally a big fan of working for friends or friends of friends as being a fairly safe bet for the most part.
Yeah, and you get a lot of out of like old connections, like you know Tara Feener from Adobe. Yeah. So she was the whole reason I got the 53 pencil page job, was because she ended up going from Adobe to 53. We stayed in touch. I told her how much I'd love to work with them, and then at one point they had a slot where they needed a dev for it. So she called me up, and that's how I got that job. Right. So it was like, you know, most of these projects are aligned around just having friends in the right places that just know that you're available to work.
Yeah. Yeah. So Tara's going to be on next season. She couldn't make it this season.
Oh, great.
So she will be on. But yeah, I kind of assumed that that she probably was the initiation there with the connection. A little too coincidental with you guys working together. But yeah, I personally, when I have the same policy with sushi, I don't go and try new sushi places unless I'm going with a friend that I trust about sushi. Like, yeah, like I it's not just anybody's like, nope, I swear this place is good. And you're like, no, I need to know what you think is good first, and then we can go.
Yeah. And then they have to taste it first.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's my policy. And there's a couple people. Christopher Joseph is one of them. I will trust him when he says, no, this is good sushi over here. We'll go try that. I'm totally on board with that. But yeah, random people. I've had Utah sushi. That's not good. Yeah. It's important. You gotta have friends that you can trust when you get referrals.
Yeah, of course.
All right. So it sounds like some of this stuff has come from your freelancing. Has freelancing felt more unsure? I don't know how to say that better.
More unknown.
Yeah. Have you felt the need for relying on advice?
I've realized since I've been freelancing that sort of everybody's learning on their own together, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So I assume that everybody that is already freelancing, when I had a job, I assumed everyone that was currently a freelancer sort of just knew everything about freelancing. And then I was the person that knew nothing. But then I take the plunge and I start asking people out for advice, and they're just like, oh, let me know how that goes for you. I'm curious myself. You start to realize like a lot of people don't know anything about pricing, or like that's the biggest thing that people talk about, like how do you price this out, what's your technique for, you know, getting a good estimate, quoting something.
It seems like a taboo topic for some people too.
Yeah, because it's also, yeah, it's pretty taboo just because, I don't know, I think everyone's at a different part in their life when it comes to freelancing. So of course when you start out, you're not going to just be like, okay, well, I charge $300 an hour. I'm a junior freelance designer or something like that. But you don't want to talk to somebody And then that's what they tell you. And then you say, okay, well, if you're getting that much, I should be getting that much. Like, I don't know. It's a tricky thing to talk about. I've talked to, like, if you can find a good friend who will be honest with you, it's really, really useful to have just real information where you just, everyone lets their guard down and you just have an honest talk about, okay, this is how much I paid for this project or how much I charge for this one. This is why, and that kind of stuff. And it's a total variable when it comes to different clients, different projects, because some of them, like for me, I could be working on one project full time for a month, or I could be working on one for 2 months, but I'm only working on it like 2 days out of the week. So it's, you got to figure out if you want to do hourly versus day rate versus week or month rate, or just like a solid value-based pricing.
Yeah.
So there's so many different ways to go about it. And I think it's such a great conversation. Anytime I sit down with other freelancers, you always learn something new just because everybody has their own experience. You don't just say like, okay, well, this is my salary. I know exactly how much I'm going to make. I know I can talk to HR if I have any problems, you know, your typical like full-time job. But going back to what you said about having things being like unsure or unknown, that's totally the case. I have this problem now where I can't see more than 2 weeks into the future. So it makes planning any projects really difficult because I don't know if, one, there are going to be any projects available or if like that one project I've been waiting out on has finally come.
Yeah.
So you want to be like, okay, should I book this gig or should I hold out for something better or do I need to take this gig right now? And then, I don't know, it's tricky compared to like a full-time job where it's like you're thinking of the future and you're just like, well, I'm going to be here for the next 3 or 4 years, or you can like see the more expected future. That's what I like about freelancing, where I have no idea what's going to happen in the next month.
Yeah.
No idea whatsoever, but that's sort of exciting about it because who knows, maybe this app that I'm working on right now will really take off. And then I'll make, you know, more than a few salaries of what I could have made with like a full-time gig. And this puts me down this road of like being able to have like full ownership of a project.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, when you're freelancing, you have more opportunities, more choices in general. And so more opportunities for terrible things to happen, more opportunities for great things to happen.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're not tied down to anything. So, I mean, if a full-time gig comes around where you, it's just something that's the right time and right project that you've been wanting to work on, you could just say yes.
Yeah.
And then if it doesn't work out, you could just go back to freelancing.
Yeah.
That's another thing I've just learned is that, you know, most of these decisions aren't for life. That I can't tell you like how much I thought that in college, getting ready to graduate. And I was like, well, I got to pick the right job because this is where I want to be for the next 30 years.
Yeah.
And I was thinking the way like my parents had it or like their generation where you're at a job for 20 years. Whereas now the norm seems to be like 1 or 2 years or 3 years seems like a lifetime.
Yeah. It is.
At a full-time job now.
Yeah. And in fact, Adobe has the 5-year sabbatical thing. In
one right.
When I first got at Adobe, I was like, all right, that's the goal. And it feels like a marathon just because it's nothing against Adobe. It's a great company. But staying in any job for that long in our industry, it's hard.
Yeah, I know. Oh, man. I remember hearing about that sabbatical, like the 5 years. And I'm just like, yeah, that's not happening. Like 5 years, it seems like so long. I'm actually on my sabbatical, my freelancer sabbatical right now, and it's taken 2 months off, and I only need to get to 2 years.
So you put in 2 years to get to 2 months?
Yeah.
Yeah. See, that's a way better deal.
Yeah. Sounds better.
Zappos here in town they've got a 2-month, but I think you have to put in 7 years.
What?
Yeah.
That's, oh my God. It's like almost a decade, you know?
Yeah.
What is that? That puts us back to 2007?
Yeah. I had just graduated a little before that.
Yep.
I can't imagine be doing the same job, but that's just our industry. I think you're right too. It's kind of the period of our of time right now in our lives. My brother-in-law, he's in sales, and he's actually slowly approached a tech industry job, and he's now almost an evangelist. And it's really interesting seeing how we've come from very different backgrounds and education and work experience. And it's amazing how much flexibility you have to move within some of these spaces now. Mm-hmm. You really can end up doing anything you want. I love it when designers switch over to development and development to design, because there are things there was a barrier there before, and it feels like it's kind of melting away a little bit.
Yeah, but I guess I'd rather see it rather than jumping from one side to the other to something more like straddling both sides. That would be the ultimate. Like if we just get rid of those designer developer titles.
Yeah.
And I hate some of the other ones. I think you talked about them on your other show, stuff like technologist. Words that really don't mean anything. But I was actually, so I was at Etsy last week, talking to their design team, just doing one of their show and tell things. And I remember like the first slide was my title slide. And I talked about just saying how I hate title slides, how it's like whenever I have to make a presentation, it's the worst part, just because I hate trying to describe what I do in one little tagline. So I first had it as like freelancer, designer, dev, which is understandable to anybody in the business. But then when you go home, for me, to small town Pennsylvania, and you have to explain to your grandpa or grandma what you do, you have to like really simplify it. And I got it narrowed down to the point of just saying, I work with computers. And I feel like I'd rather be known as somebody who works with computers than... you know, being narrowed into like one field of like designer or developer or technologist or strategist or content or whatever you want to call it.
I love the with computers. It sounds like they're animals, right? Like I work with horses.
I love that about it. It's like me going, you know, buddy, buddy, all like arms around my computer. Just like, yeah, I'm with this guy. I'm working with you.
Let's get something awesome done today. Who's in?
Right. Yeah, I'm all for that rather than saying, like, I program, I'm a programmer.
Yeah.
Or at Adobe, I think my title on the pay stub was computer scientist.
Yeah.
Which couldn't have been, like, further from the truth.
Oh, yeah. I thought you were going to say, because I simplify it to the point where I say I make websites. Like, that's a simple, but you've got a step further.
I did have that as like one step. I was like, okay, I do make websites, but I also do make mobile apps.
Yeah.
Or I, you know, design stuff off the computer.
Yeah.
So you can't just narrow it down to I make websites. You have to really step back. I use electricity.
There you go.
That's it. Yeah.
My hands move and things happen.
Yeah.
That's awesome. All right. So I really like that. And I am a big fan of trying to, there's actually somebody who mentioned the other day that, hey, maybe we don't need title slides anymore. Maybe you don't need the introductory slide.
Just jump right into it with like a cat gif or something.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So that's some of the best advice you've received. Some of it we've talked about stuff that you've learned along the way, but what if you had a chance to go back and give advice to 2007 Johnny? What advice would you give? What were some of the things that you learned the hard way that you, if someone had pulled you aside, you might have been able to avoid some of the pain?
Well, so here's the thing. I guess maybe I'm on the more pessimistic side of things. But when I think back to when I was in college doing the kind of projects I was working on, that's the exact kind of stuff I want to do now. Like, I want to get back to doing that. I feel like I went through a few years of just spinning my wheels with projects that didn't really do it for me. And I feel like that was the time when I was the most experimental with my work. I didn't really restrict myself at all. I didn't think about, you know, like, I don't know. It's frustrating because back then I would work on a project, like let's say the Twitter app that I was working on, Destroy Twitter.
Yeah.
I just built that because I wanted a Twitter app. I didn't think twice about it. I was like, you know what? I'm just going to build this. I just spent Christmas vacation just, you know, 14 hours a day just really working towards this. Didn't care what I added. I just added stuff that I wanted. I launched it, just put it up on an FTP, pointed people to a URL, started letting them download it. And it took off from there, but I would have been completely happy if it was just me using it. But the thing was, I had so much fun talking to people, hearing what they would want, just throwing some crazy ideas into this app, not thinking about, performance or, acquisitions, user acquisitions and all that stuff, or how to profit from this. You know, I was just a kid in college,
yeah.
So I didn't really need to worry about, the next paycheck or anything like that. I had to worry about that later, but not at the time. So I was able to just do that stuff. But it ended up, getting hundreds of thousands of installs and being this huge thing, I think, because I didn't really care about it. Like, I didn't really care about those things. And I just wanted to make something that was really fun and creative. And I don't know, the kind of work that I'm doing now, I just default to, is this worth doing or not? Can I sort of make a career of doing this? What do I have to price this at so that I could pay the bills and maybe not take on client work? So it's like a lot of that serious thinking that I feel like is chipping away at my old self, where I would have just done something over the weekend and put it online.
Yeah.
I don't know. So
yeah.
I guess if I could talk to my previous self, just maybe say not to go down a certain road, just to like keep at my personal projects. Because I feel like that's, like, I'm starting to return to that, like doing the whole personal apps, things that I really need for myself first. And it's starting to feel really good of just, this is working for me, but then I'll show it to other people and they're like, that's exactly what I need too. So that's telling me something. And it's totally not the way I've been thinking the past few years.
Yeah, when we were talking before about Cushion, the application you're working on, I actually was going to ask you, does it feel good to get back to making products for yourself, like Destroy Twitter? It reminded me of the work that you had done on Destroy Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it feels exactly like getting to your roots again.
Yeah. I put in my time with doing the full-time gigs, the overloading with client work, and now I feel like I have this time to sit down a little bit, not worry about the next project and just spend some time on some of my own apps. Because if I could just do this, just working on my own stuff, and it's successful enough for me to maintain that, what sounds better than that? Yeah. Nobody can come up to you and say like, hey, join our company where you won't get any credit for any of the work you do. You'll get the same amount of money year to year, maybe a little bit more. Or you could build something completely on your own, have complete ownership of it, have no stakeholders to like sort of make happy and think about demographics and that kind of stuff. You just, if that's a possibility, what would you actually say yes to? That's my goal right now, is just getting to a point where I can just work on this 100%.
Yeah, that's awesome. So how do you overcome the pressure, right? Because so you put in 2 years of doing freelance work, you're taking 2 months off.
Mm-hmm.
I'm assuming that most of it's going into the Cushion app right now.
Yeah, pretty much 100%.
So do you feel a huge amount of pressure to get it done within the 2 months? Like how do you deal with that?
See, I'm glad you brought that up, because it's an interesting thing as a, like, once you've been freelancing for a while, you sort of understand. You have that extreme pressure when you first start. You take the plunge and you say, okay, holy crap, now I have no, parachute or anything. I'm just trying to scramble to get that first gig. And you realize like, okay, I got it. I'm working on this thing. I'm starting to make some money from this and everything's okay. Like, but you still have that pressure. But I think what happens is you do this long enough and that pressure just, I think it's, the pressure doesn't go away. You just get used to the pressure. Like if somebody was pressing on your head one day, like out of nowhere, you'd be like, oh man, stop doing that. It hurts. But if they're doing it for an entire year, it's like, okay, I guess I'm just living with this now.
Yeah.
Like my dad, he's a freelancer. He's been a freelancer for the past 37 years, I think.
Yeah.
And I think it really helps that I've grown up seeing him going through the roller coaster ride of freelancing, because even 20 or 30 years into it, he'd still just day to day be like, you know what, son, I don't know if you can stay in college anymore, something like that. I'm like, Jesus, like that's the craziest thing to say, especially after being such a veteran. And I know he's like top of his game and he still has those days. So I think I look at it as like, those aren't, that pressure isn't going away. So if you just say like, okay, I see you pressure, you're not going away. Let's just try to deal with something else. It's much easier.
Yeah.
Like if I tried to fit this entire app into 2 months and do like, you know, set an extreme like deadline saying, okay, no matter what, I'm shipping at this date, I would freak out. But I have an idea of where I want to be with it, and that's good enough for me, of just knowing the progress.
Now, isn't your dad an artist?
Yeah, he's a book cover illustrator.
That's right. I had totally forgotten about that until you mentioned that he was a freelancer.
Right, yeah, and we're in totally different worlds, because I'm working on like one client project at a time for maybe a month or two, and he at every time, at any moment, has at least 10 book covers that he's doing, and some of them he does in like a day or two.
Wow.
So it's like the most polar opposite of projects that we have going on. Mm. But
that's very cool. All right. So I personally feel that pressure. And even when I'm in a full-time job, it's different. But you get the, well, if I don't do it right, there's no reason for them to keep me. Right? Like you get that pressure a little bit too. But it's different. The freelancing. Yeah. I agree with the way that you described it, but I find that when I'm doing personal projects, it's even more like I am a more intense client than any client I've ever had.
Yeah.
Because like, I know, especially when you're doing side projects or doing projects or taking a sabbatical to do projects, that if I'm not killing it, I could be doing something else, making money, you know, and if I'm doing a mediocre job, I might as well be doing a mediocre job for somebody else and be making money at it at least.
Yeah, I think you just have to get really good at ignoring those thoughts. Because, I could be making my hourly rate instead of sleeping or instead of eating. I could be eating at my desk and working while I'm doing that. But I don't know. I think everybody needs that time to work on their own stuff that they don't get paid to do, but maybe the payoff is just getting it to a certain point where you can ship it and make money from a project. I don't know. I think of it that way, and it's really easy to try to, or the challenge is to convince yourself not to think about that stuff. It's freelancing, a total mind game.
It is.
You have your internal voice always like freaking out, and you just have to say like, chill. I don't know. I just get really good at talking to yourself without other people knowing.
Now, do you use other people and bounce some of these things off of them? You mentioned being able to work with other freelancers, that it's helped to kind of see that they don't always know what they're doing.
I think every lunch conversation has a bit of that. Like we always, all of us as studio mates go out as a group to down to the food trucks or whatever food's around, and everyone like pairs up. We have different conversations, but the majority of time we do share things about freelancing, and those like whatever is on your mind comes up. You know, how do you price a certain project? I'm dealing with this kind of client. I have this client that won't pay, that kind of stuff. And everyone just throws out suggestions. So it's really nice to have this sort of comfort group. And that's why I value having a co-working space more than anything right now. You know, if I was working at home, just dealing with all this, having nobody to talk to except for the cats, I don't know if I could do it.
They're great listeners.
Yeah, but then they just stare at you.
Yeah. Sometimes you get up and walk away while you're talking to them. Maybe they're not great listeners.
Yeah, not at all.
Well, all right. So we're going to wrap things up, but I think that this is fantastic advice. So if anyone who's listening is thinking about freelancing, there's some great takeaways here. It sounds like get a good support group, talk through things with people, and find some mentors who will actually be open and honest with you about things, and fight the demons. beat back the voices in your head of doubt and fear.
Yeah, and any of that like scary stuff. Like I was talking to a friend of mine who's just considering the whole like going out on his own, and he says it's when he thinks about it, he's not going to do it now because it scares him to death. And that's sort of the exact moment when you should do it, because that fear is not going away. Like, who has ever heard of somebody quitting to go freelance, and they're just like, yeah, it was. Yeah, this was a seamless transition. There was no changes whatsoever.
Yeah, you'd have to have like a full client lined up, which you pretty much are doing full-time work at that point anyway.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, and that's good for a couple months. But yeah, past that, the fear's going to be waiting for you when the project's over. Yeah. All right, well, very cool. Well, thank you so much, Johnny, for taking the time to chat with us.
Yeah, no problem.
It's been fun to catch up, and it's fun to see the transition from full-time Johnny to freelance Johnny.
Yeah, likewise.
And we're excited. I'm excited to see how this Cushion app goes, so let us know when it comes out.
Will do.
Thanks for listening. I'm always happy to have an excuse to talk to Johnny, and he gave some excellent advice on freelancing and product work. As mentioned in the interview, the decision to freelance can be really hard and pretty scary, but it's important to know that you are capable of doing hard things. Not that I'm saying you should go quit your job right now and go freelance. It's really not for everyone, and it has its own season. What I'm saying is, no matter what your goals are, you'll have to do hard things to achieve them, and that you are fully capable of doing them. Tomorrow, I volunteered to hike with a group of teenagers to Mount Charleston here in Las Vegas. It's about a 17-mile hike with an elevation going from 7,600 at the base to almost 12,000 at the peak. For most of these young people, it'll be the first big hike they've ever done. But this is the third year that I've volunteered to go with a group like this one. What I've noticed is the change in their confidence before and after the hike. Regardless of their training and preparation, they really have no idea what they're capable of until they do something big. There's a time to prepare and a time to do hard things. If you think it's time for you to do something hard, go do it. I believe you'll surprise yourself with what you're capable of. Before I go, just a couple of things. Go follow us on Twitter at WebFriends.io. Go leave a review for the show on iTunes. There's a link at WebFriends.io. Also, I want to thank our sponsors, Campaign Monitor and Symbolicons, for supporting WebFriends. And Good Stuff for helping us stream this episode live. You can listen to live episodes on Fridays at noon Pacific on goodstuff.fm/live. Most of all, thank you for listening. You are awesome.